You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
Coming up, an easing in home price growth, cost concerns about AI, and Macquarie Group disappoints. We'll have the details next. It is your daily 10-minute business and finance news wrap for this Friday, the 1st of November 2024. On a day where the Australian share market fell by about 0.5% on the S&P ASX 200, we'll have the details with Lachlan Halloway from Morningstar in a few moments. But first to property prices, where they rose by 0.3% nationally in October, according to CoreLogic, but fell in some of the major cities in Australia, including Sydney and Melbourne. It comes as banks lend a little bit less money, according to ABS, to home borrowers. But those borrowers that are borrowing money, well, they're borrowing more in terms of their home loan size because they've reached a record of $642,000, according to the ABS. For more, Raina Bosch spoke with Tim Lawless, the head of research at CoreLogic.
Yeah, the market's almost flatlining now, and this has been a gradual trend towards a levelling out. But most of this, I guess, softness is attributable to the larger capital cities, where Melbourne's been in a downturn for some time now. Values are down annually, down a bit more than 1%. But Sydney has also drifted into negative territory through October, down to 0.1%, so pretty much a levelling out. But this is the first time we've seen a negative sign in front of the Sydney month-to-month change since January of 2023. So clearly that the larger capital cities are weighing on the headline numbers, but we've also seen values down in Canberra and in Darwin. But even the stronger markets are slowing down and losing momentum.
Yeah, speaking of some of those stronger markets, I mean, that's Perth, Brisbane and Adelaide, the kind of highlights there. Why do they continue to trend higher compared with the rest of the country?
Yeah, there's a bunch of things happening in these markets, but generally it comes down to supply being very low, demand generally being quite high. So from a supply perspective, we're still seeing listing numbers in each of those three cities remarkably low, like Brisbane's a bit more than 20% below average for this time of the year. Adelaide and Perth are still seeing listing numbers more than 30% below average for this time of the year. Stock levels are starting to rise, so that's starting to show up in just a slight extension in selling time and lower clearance rates in the auction markets. But still, very low supply levels are promoting price growth. And then on the demand side, we're still seeing generally strong interstate migration in Queensland and Western Australia, not as much in South Australia, and investor activity is quite elevated in each of those markets as well.
Now, I do want to talk about Sydney for a moment. I know you touched on it before, but obviously this is kind of Australia's leading city in terms of home prices. Is this downturn something that you're expecting to continue?
I think it probably will, and I'm expecting this will be a relatively shallow downturn. But if you look at the trends, they're clearly pointing towards, a worsening in the marketplace. And this subtle fall in October shouldn't really be a surprise, that the market's been pointing to this for some time, that the writing's been on the wall as listing numbers have been rising in Sydney. They're now tracking about 13.5% above average. So finally, buyers are getting a bit more choice, less urgency. They can negotiate a bit harder. And I think we'll see a further rise in listing numbers through the rest of spring and into early summer, which is partly a seasonal pattern. But we're also not really seeing demand keeping up with that flow of new listings. Transactional activity is down year on year in Sydney. And of course, affordability constraints are a big factor in the Sydney market as well, where we've got a median house value that's now up around the $1.5 million mark, which is huge.
Speaking to the broader market and, you know, extending on that point, we've got kind of a number of things at play here, right? So a housing shortage and a strong jobs market, which appears to be pulling prices higher. Then we've got rates, affordability pressures and sentiment pulling in the other direction. What does this all mean in terms of prices over the medium to long term?
Yeah, I think this complexity is really making it hard to predict where the market's going to go. I mean, it's hard to forecast housing markets anytime, but let alone with this many moving parts. But I think that the broad view is over the next 6 months or so, we should expect that housing markets will continue along this relatively, you know, this flattening trend, a loss of momentum in some of the stronger markets. Of course, as interest rates eventually come down, hopefully that's in the first quarter of next year, you'd have to think that would reinvigorate consumer sentiment to some extent and, of course, improve borrowing capacity and provide better access to credit. But I've got a sneaking suspicion that lower mortgage rates won't be a new catalyst for a material upswing in housing prices. And if it is, then you'll probably find that there'll be a credit tightening of some sort helping to keep a lid on housing prices, but probably more specifically, a lid on household debt levels.
How about renters? Because it seems that alongside this slowdown in prices, there's also a rental slowdown happening. Can you explain that?
Yeah, absolutely. Rental markets are finally starting to level out. In fact, we're starting to see some evidence of negative rental movements in some cities like Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane have all recorded a couple of months now where rents have just drifted a little bit lower. So part of this is net overseas migration peaked more than a year ago. In fact, nearly 2 years ago, the first quarter of 2023 was the peak in net overseas migration. So that's resulting in less flow through to rental demand. But we're also seeing gradually household sizes becoming a little bit larger as group households reform. And that's helping to take some demand away from rental growth. And there's also just simply rental affordability. And that's probably what's driving this restructure in household formation. Renters are paying about a third of their incomes towards rental costs. And it's really hard for renters to pay more than that, which I think is forcing this restructure. So finally, for renters, probably a little bit of a relief when it comes to rental growth. But I'd be very surprised if we saw a material downturn in rents, given that vacancy rates are still very tight.
Finally, Tim, this is obviously all pretty good news for people that are looking to move into the market. What does it mean, though, in terms of affordability? What are the potential threats to affordability and what can be done to mitigate those?
Well, affordability is still quite challenging wherever you look around Australia. There's a few pockets where affordability is improving, like Melbourne's a really good example. And this is the silver lining of a downturn in housing prices, is that affordability is improving. And we can see that first home buyers have become more active across Victoria. Other markets like Darwin, for example, are actually very affordable, at least in relativity to other markets, but doesn't really have the strong economy to bring more people into that housing market. But other markets, look at Sydney or Adelaide as really good examples. We're seeing dwelling value to income ratios in those markets around record highs. Debt servicing levels are also around record highs. So it's hard to see affordability challenges really turning around anytime soon unless we see a remarkable lift in incomes, which isn't likely, or a precipitous drop in housing values, which once again isn't likely either. So I think affordability will remain a key challenge, and no doubt that's going to be fueling the housing supply debate that's really starting to gather some pace now.
That's Raina Bosch there speaking with Tim Lawless from CoreLogic.
Now, Market Day on the SBS On The Money podcast.
To the Australian share market now, which did close weaker, the S&P ASX 200 off by about 0.5% to 8,118 points. It comes ahead of the US presidential election mid next week, along with the Reserve Bank decision on interest rates here in Australia. For more, I spoke with Lachlan Halloway from Morningstar.
I think a lot of that can be traced back to the US last night and the sell-off there. So two of the big AI names, the mega caps in the US, Meta and Microsoft, provided updates. Overall, in terms of revenue and profit, they're actually pretty strong. But the market really didn't like some of the guidance on the outlook for CapEx and infrastructure investment in AI. That caused a bit of volatility. The VIX was up. And the market's also reassessing the pace of US Fed rate cuts. So generally speaking, it wasn't a great session in the US, and that sort of spilled over into our market. And compounding that too, we had Macquarie out today. It was a bit of a soft result, and that probably dragged things down as well.
You know what else might impact US rate cuts? The outcome of the US election, because there might be a lot of stimulus to come, right? So that is the next big market moving event. We'll have the election on Wednesday, I think, next week. What's the likely impact on global markets? Who will it benefit or not? And just how significant will this election be for markets?
Look, I think as you point out, generally speaking, around elections, we do see periods of elevated volatility. In the long run, though, look, there's a lot of time and energy spent analysing the election and potential outcomes. We think that it's a bit overblown, though, at Morningstar about the ramifications of the long-term impacts of the election. I mean, if we look at, say, the big winner of the Biden years in the US market, you know, it wasn't tech, despite the rampage around the Magnificent Seven. It was actually energy, traditional oil and gas stocks. I don't think many people would have picked that if they'd been sat back in early 2021 when Biden was inaugurated. But of course, we had the Ukraine war and energy went through the roof, and a fairly counterintuitive outcome on the big market driver there. So things don't always play out. And if you're really gearing a portfolio to one particular theme or one particular outcome, I think that can be a bit of a trap. Over the long run, historically, you know, you really won if you've just sort of been involved, been in the market, not trying to time in and out of election results.
Can we talk about local interest rates then? We had some inflation figures out this week. The RBA meets next week. We know that rates are falling around the world, but not necessarily here. What's the market thinking will be the timing for the first interest rate cut here in Australia?
Yeah, so about a month or so ago, I think the market was expecting more likely than not there'd be a rate cut before Christmas this year, but we've actually had a fairly sharp reset of those expectations in the last couple of weeks, as we had, a very robust labour force number, and also an inflation print that suggests that there's still a bit of stickiness floating around in the consumer basket. So that's sort of caused the market to reset now. And at the moment, I think there's the first cut is priced by mid next year. So generally speaking, that's where we are at the moment. Obviously, the US has already started its rate cutting program. We look like we're going to lag a little bit, but mid next year at the moment is the market's best guess.
When you're looking at the markets today, any corporate or company news catching your eye?
Yeah, I think Macquarie was a big result of the day. It was a fairly soft one in general, and the market didn't like it too much. I mean, the big things to call out there are their commodities and global markets division, which has been a really strong performer during periods of volatility, is sort of resetting a little bit as some of that volatility comes out of the markets. And there's also been a bit of investor jitters around their investments in their green infrastructure investment section of their portfolio, when those gains are going to be realized. So, I mean, overall, it was a fairly soft operating result, and also the guidance probably wasn't quite what the market and Morningstar was expecting. That was a big call out. Look, I think earlier in the week too, just quickly on Woolies and Coles, they provided some updates there, which showed, generally speaking, there's still pressure on the consumer across, broadly speaking, across much of the consumption demographic. And also, they're also facing the fairly tough environment of rising wage costs, which is putting pressure on margins. So it was a fairly big miss of expectations from Woolies early in the week, and it shows that pressure is still out there for the consumer.
All right. So where do you see the opportunities for investors at the moment?
Yeah, so the sector that screens as most undervalued to us at Morningstar is energy. So that's Woodside and Santos, two of the big names in that basket. They're trading at a significant discount to our fair value estimates. The small caps too, generally speaking, in terms of size, they look relatively cheap compared to the large caps. I mean, obviously, when you're thinking about investing that into the market, you have to be a little bit more judicious because they're not the same quality businesses that you have in, the ASX 20 or 50. But if you are selective there, it looks like there's a number of stocks that are trading at pretty steep discounts to fair value.
That's Lachlan Holloway there from Morningstar.
This SBS On The Money stream is provided for informational purposes only. The content in this stream should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and it does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.
This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. The content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.